This is The Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly movie and TV podcast, which can be found at thehollywoodoutsider.com. This is episode 297, and we are talking about the most redeemed characters in TV this week. We're also going to talk about the Fox-Disney merging, if that actually goes through, as well as what constitutes a spoiler. We're also going to have spoiler-free reviews, and then we're going to talk about a special anniversary of a film that I think most of you will know. My name is Aaron Peterson, and joining me today are my fellow hosts, Scotty Clark.
I'll never let go, Aaron.
Don't spoil it, Scott. Huh? Don't spoil it.
Hey, did you just say we're at 297? Does that mean we're three away from 300?
We are. We
300
this
episodes.
This is The Hollywood Outsider!
Yes.
You gotta do.
I gotta do it. Yeah, we are three away, and we're still trying to figure out exactly what we're gonna do. Oh, by the way, John Davenport, he's here too. I forgot.
Yo, what's up?
Hey, how's it going? Yeah, we're coming up on 300. So that's in sometime in January, and I'm trying to get the gang back together. We'll see how it's going. I mean, Justin has had some physical stuff going on, some health stuff, so we'll see if we can get him on. I'm sure Brian will be up to it as long as we bribe him with alcohol and cookies. I'm hoping some special guests, maybe invite some past hosts. You know, you never know what could happen. It's 300. It's a big one.
Get Mike Card on here?
Yeah. Does he want to come back? We'll start all over. Go ahead.
I have no idea. I could ask him if you want me to.
You never know. Maybe we'll get there. We'll see what happens, man. It'll be fun. And John, you can come too.
Can I?
Yeah, you can.
Have I earned the right to yet?
I don't know. Do you know what number you started at?
No.
Then I guess not.
None of us do. Has it been a year? It's been a year. Yeah.
It's been a year. It's, no, over it's a definitely year. It's been actually a year and 3 months, but no one's counting.
I don't know what episode it is, but I know exactly how many hours and minutes.
I don't want to really, that's a personal question, Scott.
Fair enough. Okay, let's move into some movie and TV talk. This is a big one, and we've taken some time to kind of let it soak in, kind of ponder what it all means, but Disney has bought part of Fox Films and FX and some sports channels, and just an insane deal, $52 billion, but also it acquired some debt, so a total of like $66 billion worth of this deal. It's huge. And it is finally confirmed. So let's discuss. I mean, right off the bat, what do you think about this acquisition? Is it good for fans, bad for fans? Is it a monopoly? What do you think?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both, and for a number of reasons. First off, I think it's good because we're going to get to see a lot of properties together that we haven't had a chance to see in forever or in a really long time. Plus, we get to kind of get a potential fresh production company behind it. So it's you've got a lot of things going on there too, but the bad for me is less about the monopoly, because I understand that, but there's people are debating that, which I'm sure Aaron will get into. But I think for the consumers themselves, I think a merger like this makes less competition. So and that's never a good thing for consumers, because I think when there's good competition, that's when we get the best things from these big companies. So Aaron, you're gonna have to speak to the majority stakes in this whole thing, because I'm kind of clueless when it comes to that.
All right. Well, Fox and Disney are big. They're big companies, but Disney is the big one. I mean, it's really Disney and Warner Brothers are the big film studios at this point. But domestically speaking, Disney and Fox hold 12 of the top 20 films. That's over 50%. So that's a big chunk. Then you look at the film series they now own, because Disney and Fox own all the combined film series, Star Wars, Pixar, Avatar, Pirates of the Caribbean, Marvel, Disney classics like Beauty and the Beast and Jungle Book, Deadpool, they now own Deadpool, and X-Men are now back with Marvel. I mean, it's dangerously close to a monopoly. So when no other studio compares, maybe Warner Brothers comes close, I have to wonder if that's a little bit too much. I mean, that's basically every major film series short of Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings.
If they have a monopoly, shouldn't they just like buy some hotels? I mean...
Oh, boy.
That's really where you make the money, right?
Wow, wow, wow. Hey, Sean. Hello, my baby. Hello, my darling. Hello, my dad joke. Yeah.
I don't know which was worse, my dad joke or your little song there.
I like
your dad joke.
Without hesitation.
Yeah, there's no pause there. You know, the thing I think that might be good about this whole thing is that we are probably going to start seeing the competition get tougher. And what I mean by competition, I mean that we're going to see differences in quality and hopefully those that quality will start spiking now. We for years we've been saying how movie that doesn't really compete with television anymore, and that it's been harder and harder to get people to the theaters. But it's possible we're going to start seeing these big, like, you remember the basketball super teams that had all the different stars on them. We're probably going to start seeing more of these movie studios combining and becoming basketball super teams, where we have the best of the best from these studios coming together and giving us something of quality again, where maybe it'll start driving us to the theater more often.
The dream team of movie studios is what you're talking about?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, that's great that you live in a Disney world where everything has a happy ending. I'm more concerned with it's just going to drive the competition out. And Disney already dictates so much. They dictate to the theaters. They're constantly telling them, got to keep our Star Wars for X number of weeks or else you're going to get cut a percentage. You're going to lose money on that. Remember that happened earlier this year? I can't fathom that they won't do that. They won't throw their heft around, their weight around, and force more companies to do that. And on top of the streaming possibilities, which could affect Hulu, because I think they have their majority stakeholder in Hulu now, because Fox owned 30%, Disney owned 30%. So now they're a major stakeholder in that. They already wanted their own streaming service. Technically, they still got Hulu. I don't know what could happen.
That would be my question, because we've been talking about Disney doing a streaming service for quite a bit now. Mm-hmm. And I think all of us were kind of in the camp of, like, we didn't really want that. But part of that was because it only included Disney movies. If you're talking Disney movies and Fox movies, that makes that a little bit more exciting or interesting to me, especially if you're talking about Hulu and that all being one thing. If that's what Hulu becomes, holy cow, Hulu becomes, potentially I'd be willing to pay $15 bucks a month for, as opposed to not even wanting it at all. So
yeah. And
am I alone there?
No, you're not alone. It's insane.
No, it does sweeten a lot of the pots, but but Aaron's right in the sense of Disney's already been big at throwing their weight around. They've also done things like freeze out the press when it comes to when somebody doesn't agree with Disney, they've frozen out the press before. So
yeah, fake news. Yep.
We still have to go to Congress. They still have to approve it. There's a lot of steps that have to go through, and I would like to see the studios come up with something like this. So, the basketball super team of movie studios start coming together and developing better quality. I want to see more studios come up with something that competes more. So it's a brighter side of it, right?
I'm with you. I want that competition, that healthy competition. Because
how is it competition if you only have two studios in town that are competing? You basically have two that are left. Paramount's got nothing. What are they going to do? Top Gun 2? Oh, yeah, that's going to bring them down. And then you've got Sony, who all they have is James Bond and Spider-Man, but they don't, they have to partner with Disney to even get Spider-Man to work. So they don't have a whole lot either. So it's really just Warner Brothers and Disney. That's all you have left. They're basically starting to eliminate all the competition. You have some minor ones like Lionsgate and a couple other smaller studios. But in terms of competition, Disney and Warner Brothers is it now. That's it. They are the only competition left, because trust me, nobody at Disney's like, man, when's Paramount going to release that next Transformers movie that might take us down? It's not going to happen.
Be careful what you say.
Now, I will say, I've done a lot of research on this. A lot of people are concerned that, is this going to be the end of Netflix? Because with Disney and their streaming rights, if they get too big, will that bring down Netflix? And I will say, if you look at, they were very, very smart at Netflix. They've been saying for a very long time they wanted at least 50% of their content to be Netflix owned, and they are almost there, which means it's not, which is smart, because they knew eventually they're going to have a big hitter like Disney that gets involved and says, hey, I see something in the market. I'm going to take advantage of that. I'm going to split that market and get some of that for myself. Netflix has been working on making sure that they held their pie by building it up. That's brilliant. And I don't think it's going to hit Netflix nearly as much as people think it will.
Well, it's gonna hit Amazon first.
Oh yeah, there is some Amazon original content, but not nearly as much as there is on Netflix. Mm-mm. Even Hulu doesn't have as much, but that's a whole other discussion now. Apparently,
yeah, Amazon has some good stuff, but they're still a couple years behind Netflix, because Netflix has stuff that really does compete with everybody else, whereas some of the stuff on Amazon is very much like movie of the week quality filming and special effects and stuff.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Jean-Claude Van Johnson, but I don't think it's really going to take down Stranger Things anytime soon.
Right. No.
He couldn't even take down Seagal. So I love some Van Damme, but you know, you gotta take down the Porky guy before you can take down Stranger Things. That's just the rule. That's the rule. All right.
He doesn't even move anymore. He just kind of like swings his arm up and down.
Seriously, you know what they should have done in the Ghostbusters remake is have Steven Seagal play the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man and just give
him, God,
right with the ponytail, and he's just walking down the street. He's a huge version of himself. Yeah.
The weird ponytail hair hat that he has on.
Honestly, if there's any other actor you want to shoot in the dick, I think it's Steven Seagal.
He's too busy being a cop, and he's too busy being a cop in Louisiana sometimes.
Because he's kind of a Steven Seagal-ish. I don't know.
Yeah, kind of a douche canoe is what he's trying to say.
Yeah, I was trying to be nice after I just wasn't nice, but until it's time to not be nice, you know. That's not the first time I'm going to Swayze this episode. I'm just telling you right now. Right? That's coming. There's going to be all kinds of Swayze. I might bust out some Point Break at some point. I don't know.
You know. Give me two.
That's not Swayze. That's Gary Busey.
That's Gary Busey. I haven't even seen the movie, and I know that.
Well, let's have some fun with this whole merger, because this means that we could conceivably see some franchises combine, or Fox film characters in Disney franchises, or vice versa. So if you could do anything you want, the studio's yours, guys. You run it. What would you combine and crossover?
Before, I do have some crossover stuff, but I got one big thing that I think a lot of Star Wars fans have wanted for a long time. Now that this is all under Disney and now Fox is part of that, can we get the original Star Wars trilogy unaltered in high definition without all the Lucas garbage in there?
Because
that's a big deal, right? Because Fox is a big reason why that hasn't been able to happen, right?
I bet you we will.
So I want that.
Before you go on, do you want the Fox logo to return to the opening?
Well, that's what I was literally about to say before you interrupted me, is I want the fanfare at the beginning.
Let me just shut my ass up and I'll go back in my corner.
Yeah.
They just go, bitch, stop talking.
I do. I want that. It was a bummer when Force Awakens came out and you didn't have that at the beginning, because that was, I know that's in front of a lot of other movies, but there's something about that in front of a Star Wars movie when you see that coming out of that and then seeing the long time ago in a galaxy far, far away that just got you into Star Wars realm, and it was kind of missing, but I'm hoping that comes back. Anyway, back to your actual question, things that we want to combine or crossover. Staying on to Star Wars, I think I might be in the minority for this, but I really enjoyed what Family Guy did with Star Wars. Remember that Blue Harvest thing they did?
Yep.
No.
I would love, there was a trilogy of Family Guy episodes, like extended Family Guy episodes, where they did their own versions of all three films, and they put
No, I remember. Yes.
I would love to see more of that, but actually with Disney behind it, with the Star Wars people behind it, I think that could be actually genuinely funny. I know Family Guy has a lot of toilet humor and stuff like that, but Seth MacFarlane does do some genuinely clever things outside of that, and I would like to kind of see that brought back. Also, Deadpool and literally anybody else, just for the sheer randomness of it, anybody. I don't even have a specific
Luke
one.
Skywalker, Deadpool and Luke Skywalker. I want to see that movie.
Just make it happen. Just watch Deadpool and make fun of anybody and everybody, even if it's just like a little cameo short or something like that. I don't know. It's just that needs to happen. And then my last one, I want to see a combo of Avatar and Predator.
Damn it! That's one of mine. Scratch. Well played. Good job.
Predator in the Avatar world just sounds amazing to me.
God,
and it doesn't seem like so far out of left field that it couldn't be reality either.
No. In fact, you could do Predator on anything. Put him on Titanic. Put him on Tatooine. I mean, put him on the pirate ship. I don't care. Just put Predator everywhere. Think about that. He just randomly pops up in Disney movies. Nice. It could be amazing.
It'd be funny if there's just like you get a still frame and you just see him in the corner somewhere just randomly. Like, that's the new thing. Like, Predator is the pineapple of Disney movies now.
Oh, I love it.
He's in Jungle Book walking behind Mowgli.
You just see like a silhouette, like the invisible, whatever, just randomly.
God, I love that. Yeah, I'm all about it.
All of a sudden, the triangle dots show up on Mowgli's head.
I love the memes, by the way, that everybody is saying that the alien queen needs to be a part of the Disney princesses.
I'm all for it.
That was really funny. Well, speaking of, weren't there some others that Oh, what's her name from Jewel State from Firefly?
Firefly. Yes, there's kind of a conflict because I don't think they have the TV thing locked down. Am I misunderstanding that?
I think you're misunderstanding that. I think they have the TV thing locked down.
No, screw it. Let's get a Firefly movie. Let's go.
Yeah.
Or bring a series again.
Yeah. Aaron, why don't you go ahead with yours?
Oh, I want a Predator and an Avatar movie, but somebody took it. So
what can I say except you're welcome?
Every chance he gets, he sings that stupid song. every chance.
You shut your mouth. That song is not stupid.
Obviously, I want Wolverine in an Avengers movie. Obviously, with a Deadpool stinger, I think that would be amazing. Mm-hmm. So I want that. I think, could you get Jack Sparrow to drunkenly stumble into a Star Wars cantina?
Oh.
Because, I mean, he looks like an alien.
I like that idea, but I feel like that would piss off so many people.
I would love it.
It's hilarious to think about, but I don't think I want it in a Star Wars movie.
Yeah.
It's not canon, Aaron.
Oh, boy.
What were you saying, John?
I was going to say, I can actually see him with like the blood stripes on his pants, like Han Solo's pants that he's famously wears.
Mm. There we go. He dresses like Han Solo, but he's Jack Sparrow.
Yeah.
That'll piss some fans off right there. Yeah.
Captain Jack Solo.
Make that movie. Change it. They already like started reshooting Solo. Make it Captain Jack Solo. I'd watch that.
Right.
He comes to the bar. Where's the rum gone? I definitely shot second.
I got a bad feeling about this. All right. The other one I want the Guardians of the Galaxy could take on Alien, because why not?
Ooh, nice.
I do like that.
And lastly, I'd like a little revisionist history. So I want Benjamin Gates to kind of trip through a time portal of sorts, go back in time, and save the Titanic. More importantly, save Jack, because he didn't need to die. He was murdered.
Because he would have fit on that table, that table or
Kate Winslet
door or whatever
even
it was.
Acknowledged it just recently. So yeah, he could have lived.
So I had a little bit of fun. So the Rebel Alliance needs to smuggle Finn and Rose someplace. So they go to a cantina and they find themselves the crew of the Serenity with Malcolm Reynolds. And they're the smugglers who smuggle them into some place that's bad.
I like it.
Yeah. I mean, he was basically like a smarmy Han Solo anyway. So,
yeah. The Predator gets dropped into Wakanda. He's got to get out of Wakanda before Black Panther whoops up on him. The next one is the Disney princesses are finishing up their welcome party for Princess Leia, because that party's been going on for a long time. And then aliens show up and start causing a ruckus. But the newest princess, Ripley, drops in and saves the day.
I could see that.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
it was ruckus-y.
Hey, you connected. I saw that. That's like a Sigourney Weaver. That's like a Inception kind of thing.
The Night of the Museum crew have to go fix that stupid tablet one more time, but this time they're bringing Buzz, Woody, and the rest of the toys along to make it run a little smoother.
Oh man, that sounds insane.
I'd watch that.
Yep. And then finally, Merida's kingdom is being threatened by some mysterious creatures and a new king who wants her for himself. So Hiccup and Toothless bring in the rest of the Dragon Riders to help her out of her situation.
How to Train Your Dragon?
Yeah, and Brave.
Nice.
Isn't How to Train Your Dragon DreamWorks, though?
DreamWorks, yeah.
No, it's Fox-owned.
Is it? Are you sure?
I looked up the list of Fox properties. How to Train Your Dragon was on there.
All right, well, I concede. Okay, so that's all those little mixes. Now let's go to a problem, a real problem. I mean, we're going to solve some real problems, because I am sick of this argument. So, I have never seen so many people lose their damn minds avoiding spoilers as I have for Star Wars The Last Jedi. And we're not going to spoil anything. Don't stop listening. Don't stop. I have to ask, what exactly is a spoiler to you?
So, I go into a movie and I already know more or less what is going to happen in that movie. Get where it's point A is, I can get an idea of where point B is. So the movie to me is a trip from point A to point B. A spoiler are those things that start connecting the dots from point A to point B before I start seeing the movie. So as I'm watching the movie, I start being able to say, okay, well, this is going to lead to this because I just saw this here, and this is going to lead to that because I saw this here. And that, and from there, it starts taking away from the surprise of that trip or the enjoyment of that trip. So to me, that's what a spoiler is.
All right. Scotty?
I didn't go quite as detailed. For me, a spoiler is when somebody gives away a key element of a story that the filmmaker, not the marketing team, didn't want you to see until you saw the actual film.
Mm. Like Harry Hart.
Harry Hart.
In the Kingsman sequel.
Oh.
Because they didn't want that, and it was out in the marketing.
Exactly. Like that one I would kind of consider a spoiler, because that would have been a fun reveal.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, the director agrees with you.
Yeah. They even filmed it like it was a surprise, but wasn't at all. Damn it. I got a couple things. Okay, so I think it's easier to say what it's not. It's not a cast member. Who plays somebody is not a spoiler, unless it's a very, very specific cameo, or like Harry Hart. So there are exceptions to every rule, of course, but typically who is playing someone is not a spoiler. That's just who's playing them. That's just who was cast. That's part of the production team, really. So a spoiler, right, to me means you just told me something very central to the plot, or revealing about a twist, which I would not know from just a basic understanding of the story. That's a major spoiler. A character's costume or their look is not a spoiler. Character's motivations might be if it reveals a plot twist, but those are really what I think a spoiler is. So now we've established our particular criteria. So can we agree on some set of rules as the whole community? Can we agree on some set of rules in terms of what is a spoiler and what is acceptable and what is not?
I mean, it's hard to set rules for something like that because it's so there's no black and white. It's very gray. You just said there's exceptions to every rule. So, you know, what's the point of setting a rule if there's exceptions to it? But for me personally, I'm not going to change my social interactions or lifestyle choices in order to avoid a spoiler. Because to me, if I did that, that's not where my priorities align. I can still enjoy a movie knowing some information about it. I watched Star Wars trailers because I'm a sucker and I have to see it. My wife didn't see O-1, and we both had the same experience going into that movie. I mean, we both enjoyed it. But I don't feel like me watching it had anything ruined or anything that was revealed to me that I didn't want to see. So, but yeah, I'm not going to avoid social media. I'm not going to avoid talking to people or seeing trailers or anything to do that. It's just, I'm not willing to do that. So, but that's also me. I know that everybody else has their own individual thing. So I don't know how you set a rule if everybody feels differently about it. I mean, look at the three of us. We all had three different takes on what a spoiler was. You could kind of meld all three of those into one, but still we each had very different things to say about it.
Yeah. I think where the line starts to draw for me is where I start considering turning away from relationships that I have with people, because I feel like if I get to the point where I feel like I need to like cut some people out of my life because I don't want spoilers, then I have a problem. The thing about it is that each person needs to take responsibility for themselves as to what it is they're going to see or not see. So I agreed with all those people who are like, I'm going to go and I'm going to stay off the internet for a couple of days just because I don't want to get accidentally spoiled by some sort of thread or something else about Star Wars. If that's what it takes for you to be happy about what you're doing, that's fine. I can tell you, as somebody who only watched the first trailer for Star Wars, that I didn't get spoiled by anything going in from any sort of thread or any sort of image or any sort of nothing. Nothing spoiled me to what was going to happen. The closest thing that came to spoil was somebody who I know who's very anti-spoiler tried telling me a spoiler on the way there.
What? Oh, yeah. That's some Steven Seagal kind of business right there.
And the whole time I'm going, watch it. No. Hey, you're getting kind of close. Don't tell me anything.
Hey, hey, hey.
Put it down. Put it down. It was a really weird situation to be in because I'm like, you don't like spoilers whatsoever. Why are you threatening to tell me one? I don't understand this.
Yeah, that's... Anyhow. That's... I don't get that. But what you have to do is... I really don't think it's that hard, man. I really don't. It's very simple. I think if it's a character death, an unknown motivation, a plot twist, turn of events, cameos, or stingers, you don't reveal them. That's it. Everything, if it's just a basic, here's what it's about, here's the main story setup, that kind of stuff isn't a spoiler. It's just not. I mean,
sometimes it as reviewers that like we are, it gets hard to explain a story to somebody without giving the plot idea. You know, we're doing this all through audio. So we have to find a good way to tell the story without giving away anything that we as viewers and reviewers feel is important for people to enjoy the story. It's like when I was reviewing Better Watch Out. Hey, if you're going to watch a trailer, only watch the first 10 seconds of the trailer, then move on to the movie, because the trailer gives you away something that I thought was really important to the story and a lot of fun. As a reviewer, I took it on myself to tell people that, and I think the people who listened enjoyed it a lot more than the people who didn't.
Mm, you think so, huh?
I don't have any empirical evidence. I'm just assuming because I'm awesome.
Actually, I just caught that over the weekend, and you are absolutely right, because that movie, if you watch the trailer, ruins the entire surprise of the movie. There's a huge plot twist, and yeah, so thank you. Thank you for not ruining that, because that would have been really disappointing for me as a viewer. So do you guys think that people are just getting carried away with avoiding spoilers these days, or is it the same as it's always been?
I feel like yes. I mean, to John's point, if you're willing to like remove someone from your life or remove them as friends on Facebook or something over that, I love me movies, but I'm not going to lose friendships over something like that. I've been responsible. I feel like I haven't had anything really majorly spoiled for me in a long time. I've come close.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen some things that like, I kind of wish I would have seen that, but it didn't like ruin the experience for me. I still enjoyed the movie. So I don't know.
We talk about movie and TV news on a weekly basis. And then we talk to each other about movie and TV news on a regular basis throughout the day. And I don't ever really feel like the stuff that I've been exposed to has not led me to feel like I was spoiled. It's my responsibility to make sure I keep it clear, but we talk about this all the time. So I don't feel like I've been spoiled by anything.
No, I can't remember the last time when we've actually spoiled something on the show. We actually go to great lengths here. So I'm not even talking about us. I just mean in general. I know people who won't talk to other people or block them on social media for simply saying so-and-so was cast in a movie. And when Star Wars came out, there were people actually saying, I will unfriend you if you spoil Star Wars. And then they were saying that certain things were spoilers that were not. I mean, just they were not. There are some things that I'm sorry. You could argue it up and down. Maybe you feel that way, but it doesn't make it so. If you feel that strongly about it, sure, it's your responsibility to take yourself off of social media and avoid those things if that's really what you feel. But to me, if you're that worried about spoilers, in my opinion, I think you're doing movies wrong. And I know that's kind of a bold statement, but a movie isn't great because of that one surprise. If that's all it has, it's not a great movie. It has to be a great movie as a whole. Seven isn't great because of what's in the box. And Sixth Sense isn't great just because Bruce Willis Swayze his ass through the movie. They are both great movies because they are just great movies. I don't understand why people get so hung up on that one surprise is going to ruin my experience. I've never had that happen. I mean, yeah, it's disappointing sometimes if a big reveal is spoiled for you, but how often does that actually happen? How often does it actually happen? It's just, if it's affecting your personal life and your social life, and like you guys said, if you're cutting people off from existence because of it, it's too far. Let's back that truck up.
As you guys know, I spend an awful lot of time on Imgur when I'm, you know, not doing anything of any great importance. As a community, Imgur is kind of great because those guys will, somebody has gone to go see Star Wars. The next thing you'll see is they'll post on Imgur that their watch has begun, meaning that they're going to make sure that anything Star Wars related that would be a spoiler gets downvoted to oblivion so that nobody sees it.
Oh my God. Get a better hobby. I don't know. Why would you take all that time? Go see the movie. If it's that important to you, just hurry up and see the movie.
Well, no, they saw the movie. They're just making sure that nobody else gets spoiled on it is the thing.
So they're heroes in their eyes? Is that the way they're looking at it?
Those are some goddamn heroes, Aaron.
All right. I would disagree with them, personally. You know what? I just want people to calm down about it. Just... You know what? We're all supposed to be fans, man. Have fun with movies. Don't be so stressed out about it. If you're stressed out about that, that's a lot to pack on your shoulders. Let's enjoy it. We're supposed to love movies. That's why we're here. We love them. We don't want to be stressed out about it. So that's all we're saying. And stop unfriending people. Because you know what? You might need to move someday. and you might need them. And you won't care when you need to move that couch how much they told you about The Last Jedi.
Unfollow is a handy thing, by the way.
You son of a bitch.
I condone unfollowing. I do that quite liberally.
That's not what's different than unfriending.
I see what you did there.
What? There's not much difference there, though.
Yeah, you still remain friends. You just don't see their statuses just don't show up on your wall.
That's a more passive aggressive way to unfriend somebody, I think. That's like, yeah, I'm not really your friend anymore. You don't even know it. Nah,
I just don't want to see your food. I don't want to see your puppies.
You son of a bitch. Those puppies are important.
Puppies make the world a better place. All right, let's go to our From the Outside In topic. And it's a fun one. It comes from a listener, Anthony Farnsworth. So, Anthony, he's actually told us he was working through our back catalog. Poor guy. Which, as we spoke to earlier, you won't run into John until what episode? 200 and something?
Maybe he'll let us know. He could be like our historian.
There we go.
It's like 260 something, I thought.
Shouldn't you know?
You know, as much as I love being here, I did not commemorate the occasion.
Why is there not a plaque in your house, or a statue of Scott and I somewhere?
Wait, how do you know there's not a statue of Scott and you somewhere?
All right, now I'm liking it. I'm with you. But here's his topic. I've been rewatching Buffy with my girlfriend and forgot how much of a biatch Cordelia was and how she turned around in season 3 into Angel or Jamie Lannister. Aaron, I know you said he'll never be redeemed in your eyes. Yes, I did, and I still stand by that. Because of attempted child murder. But man, it's really hard not to think that child murder and incest love and Jamie is too pure for Westeros now. Well, can't really argue with that either. So let's get into that. What does it take to redeem a despicable character in your eyes in a television show?
It honestly doesn't take a lot for me for a character to be redeemed. Genuine remorse. There are some acts that I can't really consider redeemable, even for a fictional character. But outside of the ones I'm thinking of, believable remorse just works for me. When a character really does feel like they've turned a corner and they're genuinely wanting to be a better person or sorrowful for the things that they've done and remind us of that fact, I tend to be more in their corner with remorse.
So just like, I'm sorry.
No more than, it's, like I said, it's got to be genuine, not just an I'm sorry. Like you've got to see a change in them, and you got to see them try to make amends and make things right for the things that they've done.
All right. John, what about you?
I am pathetically easier than that, honestly.
How much easier can you get?
All it takes for me is a little bit of time and somebody who's charming and fun enough to make me forget about everything they've done. So that, God, you know, you a little bit of time. Suck.
Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give anyone a chance. And you know what's funny, though, is that sometimes when I get reminded of, like, the stuff that Jamie did, I go, oh, right, I don't like him. And then he starts getting on screen, and he starts winking at me and doing everything he does. And I'm like, nah, he's cool. I can dig it.
He doesn't actually do those things, just so you know, to you. That's in your head.
Well, you know, these are also characters. These aren't real people. They didn't actually do these things. So there's something to be...
Scott, you're really toeing a line today.
John believes he's real. He's like, I am in Westeros every day, every Sunday. That's where I'm at. I need to see him come back around. I need to legitimately have them see the errors in their ways, turn a corner, make amends, own up to it. People like Jamie Lannister, I don't see them doing that. I mean, he pushed a kid out a window. Spoiler alert, it's the first episode. I didn't ruin anything. To me, I mean, he crippled a kid. There's no coming back from that. He's a horrible person. And not to mention, he has no problem topping off his sister. That's just weird. So it takes quite a bit, and you really need to make amends. And I honestly don't know if he's actually made amends yet. So we'll see. Maybe by the end of the season, I'll actually turn that corner. But I need somebody to really make amends and own up to whatever horrible thing they did.
I'm so much easier than both of you.
Obviously, you're just like, my bad. I'm sorry I killed 8 people.
Yeah, that's all it takes. Oh, all right, you're a good guy now? Cool. All right, whatever.
You're horrible. You know what? You're part of the problem, really.
When it comes to this, I am really part of the problem.
You know what? I forgive them. Let them back into society. They'll be fine. Oh, they killed somebody again? Damn it. I really thought this was the time.
I was rooting for you this entire time. Oh, one more time? Okay, one more time.
So who for you? Who are your all-time top 3 redeemed characters on TV? Your top 3. Go ahead.
Do them all at once. All right. So Spike is my first one. When we first meet him, he's a murderous pain in the ass, and he is always there to ruin everything for Buffy. And by the time he gets to Angel, you're cheering for him to be on screen. I don't know if it's James Marsden that makes it, or if it's the way they wrote the character, but he, when he made it to Angel, he really brought something back to that show that it really needed. And it was, and Spike was awesome. He was just a lot of fun. Also, he got the awesome ability of calling Angel a wee little puppet man, and it was hysterical.
That puppet episode is so good.
I love it. My number two is Ben Linus, and the reason why is because, well, he is a monster when you first meet him. I mean, yeah, he's manipulating everyone, and he's trying to get one over on the rest of the crew of the who's on the island. And
I would argue he wasn't a monster at first, even, because you really thought he was a good guy for the first episode, right?
Well, you think that he's just trapped on the island like everybody else, but he's really, all he's doing is just being a snivelly and conniving and all that other stuff. I almost put snivelling and conniving in the one word. Awesome.
Snickiving?
Snickivy.
I mean, the guy is responsible for killing his own daughter, or at least her death. He's killed so many people on that island, but the way that he's played, and the actor Michael Emerson is doing such a wonderful job of just showing you somebody who is thinking on every single level, and it's easy to be on his side even through every turn that he takes. And by the end of the series, you're really there with him. Yeah, protect that island. It's a magical place, and it needs to be protected. And I understand everything he did, and I forgive him for all of it. Also, it took some time to get there, and that's why I probably was on his side too, honestly. And then finally, if you haven't been watching Supernatural for like the last 13 years, Crowley. Crowley started off the show as being a demon. He was a demon who you sold your soul to, and he did some very screwed up things to our heroes, which is the Winchesters. But as the show went on, he even became the king of hell. So he is essentially the devil incarnate, because the devil is someplace else doing other things. So he is pretty bad, but Mark Sheppard made that character so much fun and so interesting to watch that after a little while, the show had to write him to be more in a gray area so that people would feel okay about liking him, because he is so damn likable. And again, it's just somebody who spent enough time in a gray area that I just kind of forgave him for everything he did. It just, yeah. But I'm not that hard. I'm not that layered or anything else. All I need is time, and you can just wink at me and I'll be like, all right, what's up?
That's a good three. That's a really good three. Good list.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
My number three is Jesse Pinkman, Breaking Bad.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah, I think a lot of people gravitate toward Walter White. I do not. I couldn't stand Jesse Pinkman for most of the early seasons. And he was this whiny douchebag who got high every single minute. And then he tried to clean himself up. But no matter what happened, he allowed himself to get sucked back into Walter White's schemes. To me, he was a bigger problem than Walter White, because he just needed to man up and walk away. And then he blatantly murders somebody, an innocent man. And then he contributes to the death of a kid. But by the end of the series, Jesse does every single thing he can do to make things right. He offered to hand over Walter White. He suffered. He was tortured for his crimes. Jesse Pinkman was redeemed by the end of that series. And he went through hell, but I think he paid the price. And I was okay with his eventual fate, which I don't want to say just in case somebody does still want to watch it. But yeah, so Jesse Pinkman's number three.
Good call.
Oh, sweet. So far, you guys are behind me. I like it. Number two, Scott doesn't even know this one. Anthony mentioned Angel, and I'm going to say he's near the top of my list. You wouldn't think a hero could turn. Murder a bunch of characters we like and be redeemed. But he was. He killed somebody I loved. I loved Jenny Callender. Loved her. Or was it? Yeah, it was Jenny Callender, right?
Yeah.
What was her name? Loved her. Absolutely loved her. And he killed and tortured and maimed a bunch of people when he was Angel as a vampire. And he atoned for that, for what he did to his friends and the awfulness that he spread. He even made it his mission to save them all from hell on earth by the end of Angel the series. It was a very strong redemption story, and a person who knew the horrors that he had done and he needed to atone for them. And that's what he spent the entire series doing. His whole series was about redemption. And I just thought that character did a great job of doing so.
Agreed. Angelus was pretty much a nightmare, and Angel was do everything to fix Angelus.
Yeah, so good. Loved it. Now, my number one most redeemable character, most redeemed character is Alex Mahone on Prison Break. If you remember, I think if you're a Prison Break fan, you probably feel like he was a good guy, but he wasn't. He spent season two as this dirty agent trying to bring in and ultimately kill Lincoln Burrows and Michael Scofield. And then he became horribly addicted to drugs, almost gets Michael killed again. But then in season four, his family is brutally murdered, and he works for the brothers to bring down a syndicate and redeems himself along the way. And I really believe it's one of those arcs that only work because it is. I mean, that show is very much a ridiculous series of events. Like, the entire series is just ridiculous and stupid. But I love it. And the only way that that arc works, and you can believe that arc, is because William Fichtner is a great actor. He's just somebody who can be awful and despicable, and you still sympathize with him. And by the end of the series, even though the last season wasn't great, his arc was great. And yeah, you saw it. You were a Prison Break fan.
Mm-hmm.
He legitimately caught me off guard with how quickly he won me back on his side, because I wanted him to die in that final season. I'm like, yeah, or what later turned out to just be the fourth season, but what I thought was the final season. And he just had a great arc, and he redeemed himself, and he came back. And it was just really good. And honorable mention, Merle Dixon on Walking Dead. That's it.
Okay.
You know, I considered him as well, but it felt like he wasn't in it for very long.
He wasn't.
Was it like Winter?
Yeah, no, he was only in he was in several episodes. I think he was in half the season three. He was in a lot, but he kind of redeemed himself. He went on a suicide mission to save people, and he really, you could tell he loved his brother.
Right. I'm with you there. I'm actually shocked that none of mine were on any of your guys' list. So I was expecting some overlap somewhere. And the only real overlap we got is one of the television shows themselves, which is Breaking Bad. I picked the character Mike. If you guys remember, Mike was Gus Fring's lackey.
Oh, right.
And he was, you know, the crotchety old guy, and he had some history and all that. And you just kind of, he was working for Gus. He just immediately didn't like him. He was kind of a villain. But when he reaches his ultimate end of his arc, you'd felt for him. You didn't want to see him go. And I mean, we just got done talking about spoilers. I just pretty much spoiled what happens with that character. But
what?
It's vital to say that, like, a guy that was initially a villain has to be redeemable, because I was sad to see him go. I felt bad for him. I thought he got a raw end of the deal. And when a villain gets a raw end of the deal and you feel that way about it, I think he's been redeemed. So he was my pick. I also picked the Hound from Game of Thrones, even though that show's not finished yet. Man, I hated that guy. Absolutely hated him at the beginning. He was just such a jerk, and just said the most awful things. But as you progressed with him, you really felt like he grew as a character, to the point that you didn't want to see things go the way that they did. I mean, he started taking care of Arya, basically, even though she was more or less trying to murder him the whole time. that was her intention. But he was still protecting her and teaching her and trying to get her where she needed to be. Granted, his intentions weren't necessarily the best. But I don't know. I feel like he's been redeemed. Like, he's still not a good person by any means. But he's a guy that I'm actually finding myself root for more than I am just loving to hate him.
Right.
If you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I do.
And I actually want to see him go places with other characters. So, and I'm trying to be vague and intentionally. So
right.
But if you've seen the show, you know what I'm talking about. And my last one is Siler from Heroes. He was the villain in the first season, if I remember right. He was like the ultimate bad guy.
He was awful. Did he redeem himself? I didn't finish that series, so.
I didn't finish it, but by season two, you were on his side.
No, you weren't.
Yeah, I didn't think he redeemed himself, but I didn't finish. I stopped it, you know, right in the middle of season two.
How far did you get, John? Because I could have swore that he wound up being the good guy.
I got to the end of season two, and I think most of the way through season three, and I don't think there was ever really a moment where he was the good guy, because it's been a while, and there's no real reason for me to revisit the show, but I remember them constantly trying to hunt down Siler, and sure, the show switched it around so that we're seeing more things from his point of view, but he was still killing people for their brains.
All right, well, I'll just concede before, all of our listeners just tell me how wrong I am, and I'll just go with my honorable mention.
Okay.
Well, it's possible they'll agree with you, so, I mean, I could be wrong.
My honorable mention was going to be Sawyer from Lost. And
that's a good one.
he was, man, I just despised him in the first character. He just, everything was sarcastic and just everything was a joke. And, but you wound up just rooting for him and wanted to see him succeed and really saw some heart in that character. So, yeah, Sawyer from Lost was made my list as well. That's my three.
I actually like Sawyer more than I do Ben Linus. And I know that's sacrilege to do because Ben Linus is the greatest, blah, 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 blah. But to me, Sawyer is a character that I loved because he's sarcastic and not nice. But I also knew he was not a good guy. You know, he seemed like a bad guy, especially that first season. And he really did have that arc, like stretched out through the series. And by the end, he was a full blown. I mean, I liked him way more than Jack. So that's way better call to me. But because I don't think Ben Linus ever did enough for to make me happy with him. Some bitch.
Interesting.
Let his daughter die. You know, like I said, I get really stuck on certain things and I treat them like people because they're real.
Not me.
Obviously, you're just like, hey, let's walk it off. Let's go. Hug it out. We're all good. Who cares if you killed your kid? It's all good. Who cares if you crippled another one? Let's go to some listener picks. Scott, who are you, what are your listener choices you had from the Facebook group that we put the topic in each week when we have one?
Mine came from Ronnie Yarrow, and she said, I think Walter White redeemed himself in the end. He went from being pitiful and hapless in the beginning to one of the most vile people in the world to trying to set right all his wrongs. I will admit it was a little late, but he tried. And that was when I first started reading her comment. That's exactly what I thought. Like he did one final thing that I don't know. he was still the villain in my mind. Yes, he did that, but that I don't think that was far from redeeming everything that he had done up to that point.
Because the better answer is obviously Jesse Pinkman, right?
Right.
I can't agree with you, Aaron. It just goes against everything in my nature, but kind of.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Son of a bitch. What else you got?
I was trying to figure out where that was going.
Did you have any other ones? I couldn't remember. I can't remember.
No, that's my only one.
Okay. John, what do you got?
All right. So my first one is from Mr. Jack Saint. Well, I actually had to think about this, but Carol from The Walking Dead. Mm. She was dumb and brutal. And after her daughter was shot, she was hard to deal with in season two. I hated everything about her, and now she's the badass of the group. She has redeemed herself highly, and this is a special note to Mr. Clark. Look at the flowers, Scott. It's a Christmas movie. Just look at the flowers.
He will not let you go.
He really won't. At least I'll have a moment of just talking to Aaron because Scott will probably be quiet for another 5 minutes.
You haven't figured it out. If you mention Die Hard around Scott and Christmas, you ain't hear nothing. He'll probably never watch that movie again. Never.
Probably not. It's probably been ruined entirely. If he hears one more yippee-ki-yay, he is going to shoot somebody.
You have any other one or is that it?
Kyle Nolan agreed with me that Spike on Buffy... But he also doesn't think it was Spike's own choice to do that turnaround. But I actually think it was. I think originally he had to figure out how to turn himself around because of the whole Secret Service group putting the implant in his brain. But then he wanted to make himself more of a better person so that Buffy would fall in love with him. So I think that it was a trip that he went on his own. So, yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that. He did it for love. Or I don't know, maybe stalkerism. Whatever, it's obsession, but love. Some people call it love.
Well, he's like 16th century, 17th century poet. So, yeah, it's probably a little bit of both stalkerism kind of thing. That's what they did back then, right? It was acceptable.
I wasn't there. I mean, you know, I waited.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I waited until cable came around. That was my that was my deal. Wayne Henderson, by the way, agreed with you about Benjamin Linus. I like Scott's pick better. Amy Hutchison says Dan Scott in One Tree Hill. He did some pretty horrible things throughout the course of the show, but he worked to redeem himself. The show wrote a great redemption story for him. In the end, he made amends with most of the characters, and I think most of the audience as well. Amy, I'm just going to concede that because I've never watched it, and as you know, I'm probably not going to. So let's all play a tiny violin for One Tree Hill. She's yelling at me.
I don't have anything much to say. I've never seen the show, so.
You're doing it right. You're doing TV right, Scott.
Just kidding. I think she would disagree with you.
I know, vehemently. She's probably throwing things at the radio right now or whatever.
We should play a new game and try to just purposely confusing One Tree Hill with like the OC or something.
Or the OA. Let's just go crazy.
Or the OA, right.
Let's go insane. If you want to support us on Patreon, you can do that at patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. Supporting The Hollywood Outsider does help pay for the expenses of your favorite podcast, and you can get extra content. So if you donate $5 a month, not only does it keep our show going, but you actually get new material for your efforts. And we have 2 episodes a month for people that pay $5. And there's also Bad Movie Night if you just pay 3. So you can get 1 or 2. There's different tiers. So you pick what you want to pick. And also, we're going to start doing a giveaway every month. So one of our Patreon supporters will get either a Blu-ray or a digital copy once a month. We're going to do that. So if you support us, we're going to try and give a little something back as well on top of the bonus content. So patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. Let's go to What's This Movie, Scott.
Well, we are going to be off next week for the holiday, so there will be no clip this week, but we do have a shout-out from the last episode. So last week's clip was mine, and it was from The Whole Nine Yards. Those that guessed it correctly were Anthony Farnsworth, Will Ross, Nate Bruce, and Tommy Lynch. Didn't know, but he did want to say thanks for another year of information, opinion, laughs, and other emotions. Looking forward to 2018.
I like that. It was great because the email was like, what's this movie? He got all excited. Like he answered, it seemed like he was excited. And he's like, I have no idea.
He just wanted to tell us that he laughed, he cried, he learned something.
Yeah, that's very sweet. Thank you. We love those. Keep them coming. Please let us know that we're not making you miserable because that would suck. And before we get into our spoiler-free reviews, I want you to hear a little commercial for my new podcast, Smirk. Welcome to Smirk.
Each week, one of our hosts will write a story with a specific topic in mind.
After unraveling their tale, the fun begins as we identify and launch into a spirited discussion on the author's topic.
It's a meshing of creative storytelling, realistic discussion, and a healthy dose of humor.
Be sure to subscribe to Smirk on your favorite podcast app.
And visit our website at smirkpodcast.com.
This is the show that looks at truth, fiction, and reality with a smirk. Let's see. So we're going to spoiler-free reviews. We've got Film Stars Don't Die in Liverpool. I saw that. There are actually 2 interviews in the feed right now with the director, Paul McGugan. And I butcher his name because it's hard to say because he's got like 2 G's. Paul McGugan. There. Hey, I did it.
And there you go.
Very good director. He did Victor Frankenstein. He's done many episodes of Sherlock. He did some episodes of Luke Cage, the pilot for Designated Survivor, Wicker Park. He's done a lot of good stuff. Annette Bening stars as Gloria Graham. She's an aging acting icon. And if you don't know, historically, she was in a lot of Bogey's movies. So go back and look at Humphrey Bogart's movie, and you'll see a lot of Gloria Graham in there. She learns she's sick. She might be dying. So rather than suffering alone, she calls on her former love, Peter Turner, who's played by Jamie Bell, and she requests to stay with him and his family. Now, it sounds weird, but Peter takes her in. And after taking her in, he begins to reflect upon the love that they had before, wondering where it all went wrong, and most importantly, where do Gloria and Peter go from here? This was one of those movies that I didn't know what to expect. I assumed it was going to be one of those behind-the-scenes Hollywood stories, and it doesn't really go anywhere. But it ends up being not really about Hollywood, but about love. It's about a romance that managed to morph into a friendship where they had love. The reasons why they split apart are, you come to find that out later. And then they reconcile so she can be with someone she knows cares about her in her final days. It's a very sweet movie. Annette Bening is great. She's just, I mean, she's one of those actresses that does no wrong. She just does no wrong. And I know this movie is trying to get some Academy attention, and I hope it does, because she deserves something. But Jamie Bell is like the secret weapon in this movie, because he's one of those actors that I don't think ever gets enough attention. He's very understated. He's very relaxed in his performance. He doesn't oversell anything. He really just sits back and lets the performance play. And he does it, I think, brilliantly in this movie. He's just... wonderful performance. It's a wonderful story. Scott, I think this is the kind of movie you might like. It's very sweet and romantic. And I know a lot of ladies out there love romance movies. This is one I think you'll enjoy. Film Stars Don't Die in Liverpool. If $10 is the full price of admission, I would give it $7.50. And in addition to director Paul McGugan on that interview that I have, also the actual Peter Turner that the story is based on, because it's based on a true story, is actually part of that interview too. And his conversation will just melt your heart, because you can tell he loved her. And seeing the story brought to screen just makes him feel something. And it comes across in his conversation. It's very moving. And not many interviews would I say are moving, and his is. So I would recommend checking that out if you're a fan of love.
Thanks for the heads up. That sounds really interesting.
Now, certain tiers of our Patreon supporters can make us watch a movie and review it. And Jack Saint did just that. He wanted us to check out Paranoia Tapes. Scott, tell us about this movie.
Well, it's really hard to tell what this movie is about because there's multiple different things going on. But at its core, it's a found footage film. And it starts out, I really genuinely thought I had stumbled onto a documentary when I started watching it because I was seeing actual found footage that and with some voiceover kind of commenting on what it was. But what it winds up turning out to be is actual shot, staged found footage and just different little vignettes. But you're not seeing each individual one in completion. You're kind of seeing a bit here and then you go to a bit to another vignette, another part of another vignette, and then kind of loops back around and you see all these different ones. And each one of these little stories is you know, pretty gruesome. There's usually somebody dying in them or speaking to the camera like a crazy person. They're very creepy. A couple things are very unsettling. And I am honestly not quite sure how to even – if I understood what happened at the very end. Mine ended very abruptly. Did you guys get the same thing on your end?
Yeah. I felt very abrupt. Yeah.
So what did you think of the storylines that were going on here and the idea of found footage being just different stories on one?
I found it to be a little bit troublesome. And the reason why it was troublesome, though, each vignette was actually pretty interesting to watch. And they had some great things to them. What I think would have been nicer to see is some semblance of like a unifying theme or a unifying thing that brought them all together, besides the fact that they were all found footage. And because there was nothing unifying them all, when it came to the actual story that was being told, you know, this guy's put together this tape, strung through with his actual tapes, or him strung through with himself to show everyone what happened to his brother and his father, those kind of get lost in the noise of all the other vignettes, I think.
Yeah, the one thing I will say is that it needed more of a narrative. It needed more of an overarching narrative to tie it all together. Otherwise, it feels like a bunch of YouTube clips assembled. You know what I mean?
Right.
Where it just felt like not really a cohesive narrative. It was just kind of all over the place. And I'm a big fan of when people try to accomplish a film and they set out to do it and they make a movie that's something to acknowledge and something to appreciate, no matter how the movie might come out. I don't think it's necessarily a good movie. And I'm sorry, you know, Jack, I'm not trying to trash your film. I certainly am not. But I think there's a good idea here.
I feel too.
Yeah, there's a good concept here. There's a good foundation. And I believe they're doing a sequel to it. So maybe that's what they're going to build on and make something a little stronger the next time. Because there are some genuinely interesting and intriguing parts. There's a scene with the mother with a crying baby that I thought was great. I love that scene because it was very unsettling, very annoying, and it made me want to bounce a kid, you know, out of a manger myself. So I got the frustration that the mother was feeling, and there's a couple other ones that are very unsettling and jarring, but it really just needed to be maybe stretched out a little bit more. It felt like VHS, you know, that series. It felt kind of like that, but with less cohesive structure. It needed just a little bit more tying it together to really say it's a good movie. But I think there's something cool there. I think there's a cool concept idea there and an idea there. I just didn't think it came together in this particular movie.
I do want to say that there were some really awesome cinematography things that he did that where he played with shadows. I don't know what his budget was, but there wasn't like a lot of gore. You kind of saw things off screen, but he did things where a character would move off screen. So you just see like the back half of their body and then you see their shadow doing something in the distance. I thought that was really cool. There were a couple of different cinematography things that I thought were really well done. So I'm going to echo what Aaron says. I think you've got a good base for something. I think you've got a great idea here. I just want to see a little bit more of it sticking everything together.
So to reiterate what everyone's saying is that what I'm seeing is a really good sketch. It's a good sketch that, yeah, you can get away with putting it up on a wall and people will appreciate that sketch for what it is. But the thing about a good sketch is that it is the potential that you can work with from there. And this film has a lot of potential. It can go pretty far. The only thing that you need to do is really unify the vision, I think, into something that's more cohesive and tells the story a little bit better. I really enjoyed Rex Tillerson and Steve Bannon trying to go blowing up a government building and then blowing themselves up.
He did look like Steve Bannon.
He did look like Steve Bannon, yeah. Well, we did check it out. It is available on Amazon Prime. If you want to check it out, it's Paranoia Tapes. Okay, guys, I am going to cut in here real quick because when we recorded this episode, I hadn't seen it yet. Well, now I have. I have seen The Greatest Showman, and I noticed that the reviews were a little harsh on it because they want P.T. Barnum's real-life story to be out there. Well, guess what? This is not a biopic or a biopic, whichever way you feel like taking that. This is a rousing musical. It's meant to inspire people. It's meant to be a revisionist history piece on the events of P.T. Barnum and how he created the circus. It's not that movie. It's just not. The movie follows Hugh Jackman as P.T. Barnum, and he wants more. He grows up a poor child who's in love with a rich socialite, played by Michelle Williams, and he does everything he can to give her the life that he always wanted. Now, really what it ultimately is the life he always wanted, because he wanted the well-to-dos to look at him with the same respect that they look at each other. He wanted to be part of that life. As he gets older, he finds a niche. He finds a niche in the odd people, the misfits, the bearded lady, the dwarf, the dog boy, a boy who's covered in hair, trapeze artists, people that are kind of cast out in society, and pulls them together to create a show, the greatest show on earth. Now, some people are offended by it. There's even a representation of a latter-day film critic in the movie who's very sour on the idea and the concept. But what he does do is bring these people together and give them a home, something that they didn't have before because they're all kind of just hiding in the shadows, ashamed of who they were. The movie is about believing in yourself, coming together, finding yourself, and it's done through some fantastic musical performances. I didn't know it was a musical going into the movie. I had no idea. I just thought there were going to be a couple songs in it, like a pop soundtrack or something. But it is 100% a musical. And unlike most musicals where I'm waiting for the music to end just so I can get back to the story, I honestly think the musical is the best part. This is the best soundtrack, maybe the best collection of music I have heard all year long. The film also stars Zac Efron. He's fantastic. He's basically brought in as Carlisle. He's a partner that Barnum reaches out to kind of bring a level of legitimacy to the production. You've got Rebecca Ferguson, who plays Jenny Lind, who is an opera singer from overseas that Barnum brings over. And basically, much to the chagrin of his misfits, because she is a very beautiful, very professional, respectable singer, she's not really part of that. And he ends up kind of trying to get that level of respectability he's always craved, not realizing that he has everything he needs back in his own circus. And then you have Zendaya, who is a trapeze artist, who comes to fall in love with Carlisle, but because they are opposites and they are not the same, according to society, they shouldn't be dating. So there's a relationship issue there. That's all I want to say about the movie, because I want you to experience it. The movie is so good. And I'm so tired of people saying, well, that's not the real P.T. Barnum. That's not really his story. So I did a little sample, okay, just to verify the information that was presented here. I took five top critics who trashed the movie, and I'm not going to tell you who they are because honestly, I don't feel like going through all that and having people nitpick what I'm saying here, but go do your own sample. I took five top critics from Rotten Tomatoes that had said that this movie was garbage, specifically because of the history, because they feel Barnum is a reprehensible character, which is debatable to some degree, but that's beside the point, and they don't feel like that story was properly represented. Okay, same five critics went back and found their reviews of Inglourious Basterds, another revisionist history piece where it's presented almost as reality, yet it's completely not reality. Same people loved the fact that history was changed. So it feels like we're cherry picking on what is okay to modify. So I'm going to say this. Yes, they could have presented the material as a straight up biopic. They did not. They make it clear in the very first 5 minutes, this is not meant to be an accurate representation of that guy. what it is. This is a film that's supposed to is take the events, paint a revisionist history on top of the canvas, and give you a story that inspires, that is about bringing people together. It's about unity. It's the kind of movie you need this time of year, man. It is an upbeat, uplifting, fun movie. I walked out of there and I couldn't stop singing. I haven't stopped listening to the soundtrack since I left. Didn't expect any of that. Yes, the story is cookie cutter. It's predictable. All that jive. But the performances are electric, and it's all led by Hugh Jackman, who is fantastic as P.T. Barnum. Zac Efron reminded me that he is a talented guy because he's done some schlocky comedies for a while. I almost forgot how freaking talented he is. He is great. Zendaya has that thing, that it factor, that's just electric. It's just like, as soon as the camera goes to her, you can't look away. She's just one of those actors. So I really look forward to what she has coming up next. The Greatest Showman is a hell of a lot of fun, and everybody that enjoys having fun at a theater should check it out. If $10 is the full price of admission, I give it $8. I give it a little bit more if the story was a little more solid, but I'm going to be honest, it's a cookie cutter story. But in terms of entertainment and fun, there's no price you can put on it. This is a great time for the family at the movies. Okay, now let's move on to new releases, Scotty.
All right, we got quite a few. There's a bunch that are going to be hitting theaters. You're going to be hearing this for the holiday season, and we're going to be away from the mic for a little bit. So we want to give you a quick rundown. First off is this movie, Downsizing. This is a social satire in which a guy realizes he would have a better life if he were to shrink himself, and that guy is Matt Damon. It actually looks really interesting and funny, so I'm looking forward to that one. Also, we've got a movie called Father Figures. Two fraternal twin brothers hit the road in order to find their father, whom they were told was dead, and that is Ed Helms and Owen Wilson. It's a comedy. It looks pretty funny. Pitch Perfect 3 is also coming. I don't believe we had to say a whole lot about that one, but the girls are back to compete in an overseas tour against actual musicians with actual instruments. So their a cappella voices are going to have to do some legwork. The Greatest Showman. This is an original musical that celebrates show business. Hugh Jackman as P.T. Barnum looks fantastic, and I'm really, really excited for that one. Actually, I got to see a shot of that, by the way. Oh, they played a little bit of a live performance of that during the Christmas Story musical this weekend. So,
was Jackman there? Was Hugh Jackman in it?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Did he sing?
It was. He did.
He's got a really. This is gonna sound so like I'm in love with him because I am, but he's a really talented man with a delightful voice.
He really does have a great voice. And lastly, Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle. Aaron actually saw this one already and has a review up on our website, and he reviewed it on episode 296 if you want to hear that. It's a remake of the film from the 90s starring Robin Williams. This one has stars The Rock and
not a remake. It's actually a sequel.
Sequel.
Sequel,
you're right.
Reboot. A C-boot.
A C-boot?
A C-boot.
C-boot.
So there's your five, guys. Between Downsizing, Father Figures, Pitch Perfect 3, The Greatest Showman, and Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle, what is your pick of the season? Start with John.
I'm really frothing at the bit to see Jumanji.
I do want to see that as well.
It's good. You guys will like it. Really, you will. And Scott, you're going to love it.
Yeah, that's what you keep saying.
I'm telling you, man. It's like the best video game adaptation of a property that never existed. So
there you go.
Yeah.
I already know what your answer is, but why don't you go ahead and tell the listeners?
Yeah. Let me run down these real quick. Downsizing. I do want to see it, but I ain't in no hurry. Father Figures. That'll be great when it's on USA in about a week.
On Father's Day weekend.
Yep, exactly. Pitch Perfect 3. I still haven't seen Pitch Perfect 2, so I'm really in no hurry to see this one. And Jumanji, I already saw, but I would actually see it again. I really did enjoy it. It was a lot of fun. Now, that said, The Greatest Showman. I mean, come on. It's Hugh Jackman, one of the most talented actors in Hollywood. He's doing Logan, where he's cutting people to shreds in the same year as he's playing a musical, dancing, jovial. He's just, I got to see everything he does. I don't care what he does, I'm seeing it.
I'm with you, especially after what I saw this weekend. But I'm seriously considering going to the theater on Thursday and pulling a double and seeing Jumanji and Greatest Showman.
Oh, that sounds like a wonderful Thursday.
Doesn't it?
It does.
Just make a night out of it. That sounds like a solid time. So I may have to do that. But The Greatest Showman is my number one pick, just for the reasons that Aaron said. Hugh Jackman is so entertaining on screen. And just that little taste that I got this weekend just really solidified it. I was when Aaron started talking it up a while back, I was like, yeah, okay. I didn't even realize it was a musical. I thought it was, because they didn't, in that first trailer, they didn't really make it sound like it was a musical. The second one started getting some of the music in there, and I'm like, okay, I'm on board. This looks really great, and I cannot wait to see it.
I mean, it's not what I expected. I really thought it was just a straight told movie with a couple selections, but if I trust in Jackman.
Did you see Les Mis?
Well, no, I don't like Les Mis. It's not, I don't like that story.
He doesn't trust in Jackman that much.
That much.
I don't like that story. Look, if I want to be that sad, I will really focus on my own life. I don't need to go and see Les Mis to be sadder than I've been in my current life. It's just, it's a movie that is there to make you depressed. And I don't want to be that depressed. It's a beautiful story. I have seen an older one. If that makes you feel better.
It wasn't as good as this one.
Really? Let me mark down a list of stuff I've recommended that you're like, yeah, I'll get to it. How's that on my face, Scott? You watched that yet?
Wait, what?
Exactly. See? Oh, look. It's like Die Hard Christmas in here. What happened?
Oh, my God.
All right. Let's go to significant anniversary, John.
So this month marks the 20th anniversary of Titanic. And whatever you may feel about the movie now, when it came out, it was the Justice League of its time. It had production issues. It was supposed to shoot for 138 days. That grew to 160. The budget shot up to $200 million. And, well, director James Cameron is a pain in the ass to work with. And even Kate Winslet said that she would not work with him unless they paid her a lot of money. Other fun facts about the movie that you may like to hear is that it grossed $600 million domestic, $2.1 billion worldwide. It was the number one movie in the box office for 15 consecutive weeks. So that was from December 19th, 1997 to April 2nd, 1998. It was in the theater for so long that Paramount had to send out replacement reels to theaters because everybody was wearing out their copies. And one of the coolest things that I found out about Titanic was that James Cameron took time to meet with each one of the 150 extras that were in the movie and tell them a story and let them know about the identity of the people that they were portraying in the movie itself. And I thought that was actually very sweet and very cool, because it is important to live those stories out. And so the movie, costing $200 million to make, actually cost more to build the ship itself. So to construct the ship in 1910 to 1912, it cost 1.5 million pounds, which is equivalent to $7.5 million here in the U.S., which in 1997 dollars is $120 to $150 million.
Good Lord.
Yeah. The final thing that I thought was awesome was that when they released the DVD and the VHS for this movie, it was still being shown in the theaters. So that I thought that was pretty cool. So Aaron, what do you think about the legacy of Titanic?
Well, I've already, I think, talked about how I met my first date with my wife was Titanic. And it's probably a lot of people's first dates was Titanic. But it's a movie.
I went with my brother.
Oh, what's that?
I went with my brother.
You went with your brother?
Yeah, we've talked about it at length, how his brother was his date, and that's they really wanted to go see it because of Kate Winslet's boobs.
Classy man. I'm not going to lie. They were great on the big screen. So when that movie was coming out, that was one of those things where I think every huge movie fan was not looking forward to it. All you heard, very much in the same scope of Justice League, it was a nightmare. There was nothing but problems on the set. There was nothing but production issues. It was delayed. You heard that you had to have studios partnering up to even get the film made to release it. It became one of those Hollywood horror stories where nothing good can come of this. There's just no way it's going to be a good movie. And as it got closer, I really don't remember. I mean, I'm trying to reflect back on so many, I mean, that's 20 years ago. But I don't remember a time where people were genuinely excited about it until the Celine Dion song started coming out. I really think that might be the turning of interest. And then, you know, I got people to say, hey, that song is really catchy. I know people knock it now, but man, you couldn't go anywhere without wanting to sing that song yourself when that song came out. And then the movie came out and people finally started seeing it and they started talking. And it, you know what? Once again, it's one of those movies where people loved it when it came out, but now they love to trash it because, you know, it's cool to trash things that are popular. It's just, I get it, whatever. I don't think it's ever lost its luster. To me, this is one of the rare perfect 10 movies. I cannot find a fault with it. I think the length is perfect. I think the way that they bookended it is perfect. I think the way that she throws that jewel away is perfect. The only issue I have is how she murdered Jack at the end. but to me, I remember seeing this movie in the theater on a big screen, and I was captivated. I fell in love with Kate Winslet. I fell in love with Leonardo DiCaprio. And I remember walking into it going, you mean the Growing Pains kid? Why the hell do I want to see a movie with him in it? And he, magical. And then everything they went through, I didn't know the story. I didn't care about the title. I knew it went down. That's all I knew. Man, I was obsessed with the history of it after this. It just, everything about it became fascinating. The love story worked. The history worked. The villain, Billy Zane, David McGraw, if you're listening, Billy Zane, he's your man. I know.
Or the better half.
He captivated me. Just everything about it worked for me. And it's one of those movies that endures. I've seen it in the theater since it re-released a couple times. Love it every time I watch it.
I'm with you. I'm actually just the opposite, though, when it comes to fascination with Titanic. I was obsessed with it when I was a kid. I used to.
Oh, were you really?
Yeah, I used to check out the books and read all about it. I wanted to be one of those guys that got to go down and see it. It was something, because you know me, like I like disaster movies
yeah,
and stuff.
Yeah, okay.
So like the thought of this being a real life thing and actually being able to kind of see that and unfold the story, that's why I was so stoked about seeing this, is we get to see what those guys did. Like you said, how they bookended it. Those guys that were deep sea diving with those the robots and got to go through and see all this. That's what I wanted to see. I was all excited about that. The love story wound up being the even better part of it. But yeah, I could not wait. I read those books and I did all this research when I was a kid because I was obsessed with it. Just something that big sinking. I wanted to know how it worked. I wanted to know what made all that happen. So when that guy explained it in the movie, I was like, uh-huh, yep, mm-hmm. So that was and then like you said, it holds up. I watched this recently. I think it was on Netflix last year, and I rewatched it. And it's a captivating movie. It's one you can't turn your eyes away from. Mm-mm. And I'm shocked to hear you say that people like bash this movie. I must not be hearing it. I don't know a person that outside of making fun of the door thing like you're talking about, you know, I'll never let go. It's just.
And then everyone cries his dead fingers from the thing. Bye.
Right. And I can't think of another movie where I heard of people going to see it double digits of times in the theater. I mean, there was girls on the radio that were claiming that they saw it like over 50 times. And I don't know how much of that I believe, but
oh, I believe it. I mean,
10, I 12 it. Times.
Yeah. I knew people that went every day for a couple weeks. I mean, they were obsessed with the movie and the love story. They were just obsessed with it.
It was a good love story. It really was. And you hated Billy Zane's character at some points, and you were cheering him on. Oh, just.
And he's kind of being wronged a lot.
Right.
In the movie. He is. But he's still, you know, hey, screw you, Billy Zane. Leonardo's my boy.
Right.
I mean, he did order her food for her. That's what, like, what the biggest jerk thing he did at the beginning of that movie.
Well, until he hit her. I mean.
Well, yeah. It's up to that point.
Let's talk about irredeemable.
It's kind of hard to come back now. But it's one of those. It's one of those movie things where he didn't do enough. So they're like, you know what you got to do? You got to suck her.
Anyhow. My sister was one of those girls who saw his double digits in the theater, and she never really like drove to go see anything in the theater. And the girl that I was dating, you know, she had seen it 3 or 4 times when she finally said, hey, will you finally go see this with me? And I said, okay, fine. I'll go. If it'll make you happy. Yeah, I'll go. And I saw it, and it was something that I really enjoyed for the pure enjoyment of seeing it. I didn't enjoy it to make her happy. I didn't enjoy it because she wanted me there with her. I enjoyed it because it was just that good of a movie. And to me, that was something that was incredible because, especially at that time, I was more interested in like things blowing up and all that jazz. So I didn't want feelings in my movie. Screw that.
Yeah, I cried so much every time I've seen it. To this day, I still cry at the end. Yep, still do. I'm not ashamed of it either.
Shouldn't be.
I'm not. Great movie, and it's quite a legacy. It's one of those movies that I was glad was not the disaster that the actual Titanic was. So
right. Well, it makes me wonder if social media was as prevalent then as it is now, it makes me wonder if social media would have been able to tank it like it does so many movies now.
That's a good question. Probably, right? I mean, why wouldn't it? That's what social media does.
Yeah. I mean, I can't tell you how many people who've told me that some movies are bad. They haven't gone to see them, but they, and when I tell them, no, I saw it. It's a good movie. No, it's still bad.
Well, you know, hey, science. That's, I would just argue science always. That's right. What it is. All right. Well, moving on, guys. Any recent film or TV recommendations you want to tell people to check out while they have some time off?
I got a couple. One I alluded to already. I saw the Christmas Story Live on Sunday night. It was 3 hours long, which obviously included commercials and everything. Yeah, 3 hours.
That's too long for that. Don't you think?
Christmas Story. He can't handle Christmas Story for 3 hours.
Sure. You don't even like the regular movie. But here's the thing about that is I did enjoy it. The attention to detail that they put forth in it to make it look like the original was incredible. They really did a good job of recreating a lot of those scenes and making you feel like you were just seeing like a stage version of it, which is actually what it was. But I mean, the costumes and the lines that the characters said were just really, really well done. Maya Rudolph totally surprised me as the mother. She did great. I'm so used to her just being like a comedic role. Mm-hmm. She pulled that role off really well. Matthew Broderick as the narrator was perfect. He could not have asked for a better narrator. He just pulled it off. Everything about this that was story or the narrator telling the story about everything that happened in the movie was great. I started to get a little annoyed every time somebody sang. Mm. And I know that's a little sacrilegious because I love musicals, but I don't know. The songs bug me. Maybe it's because I didn't know the music, or maybe because the musical numbers didn't feel Christmassy. I don't know. There wasn't any kind of like Christmas flavor to them at all. And so I started to get into it a little bit more towards the end, and it wrapped up beautifully. The ending really, really was awesome. It just felt like it was a little bit too long to get there. And I will say that it was really cool to see the curtain call at the end. They actually did a full-on stage curtain call with everybody. And apparently the kid that they got to play Ralphie was – I mean, I know he's young, so it's easy to say this, but he was nobody. He had done like one commercial and maybe a small spot on like SVU or something, and that's all he did. And he was great. I didn't look at the camera, didn't do all the things that you expect kid actors to do. All the kids were just fantastic, even with the dancing and everything, just perfectly choreographed. It's worth a watch, and I've talked to some people that do not like Christmas Story, mm-hmm. that like the musical. So even if you don't like the movie, give this one a shot, at least. Just get past the first couple songs, because like I said, that's where I started to feel annoyed, but I got used to it as I went along. I did also get a chance to see Mother, which...
Sorry, finish your thought.
I was really nervous to bring up because after hearing Aaron talk about it and just blast this thing to pieces, I went into this thing not really knowing what to expect. I knew that it was a metaphor. I knew it was Aronofsky. Guys, I like this movie.
Oh, you know what? Scott, Die Hard Christmas.
All right, so I don't have much to bring to.
Just kidding. Go ahead and finish that. I'm sorry. A lot of people did like the movie, so please without spoiling.
Here's the thing: it is a divisive movie, and I'm not going to spoil anything. And I get that, but I was expecting a different kind of crazy than what this movie was. The story isn't so much a story; it is straight up a metaphor. You kind of have to go into that knowing that you're not going to get like any resolution to what's happening or any explanation. What's happening is like a stage presentation of a metaphor. Mm-hmm. And when you realize what that metaphor is, I really found myself enjoying it. I could see how it would piss off a certain sect of people, but I love piecing it together and seeing the parallels of things that I recognized. And the final shot I actually thought was really cool. I really dug the final shot, and I was so scared to bring this up to you guys. Because
why would you be scared? I mean, if you liked it, you liked it. I'm not knocking you. I didn't. But I do think there's merit to it. And I did say, I think people should like check it out. They should. I personally don't like, I'll never watch it again. But I do think
that there's
merits to it. The first hour I thought was great. It's the second hour I thought where it was like a hammer on a nail.
Really? Because I was expecting like trippy levels of like LSD type situations, and it wasn't that. It was just very busy. But no, I don't know.
The reason I didn't like it is like, stop punching me in the face with your message. That's really what That's what my problem was. But you right. liked the message, so that's the difference. Or you liked how it was presented, so that's the difference.
Well, it's hard to speak about it without really spoiling it.
Right.
But if you know who Aronofsky is as a person and you know what the metaphor is, it almost doesn't make sense until you realize what he's actually doing with that message. And I get, like I said, how that can make people upset, but I just thought it was an interesting take. So I really enjoyed it. No, now I know that I know what the metaphor is after watching it. I kind of want to go back and experience it again to see how it all pieced together, if that makes sense. Ooh. I won't do it anytime soon, but
yeah, you know what? You let me know how that works out for you.
All right, we'll do.
I'm going to watch anything else. So John, what about you, John? Anything you want to mention before you close up?
You know what? Everybody go on Amazon Prime and watch Jack Hunter's Paranoia Tapes.
Okay. You're selling his movie for him?
Yeah. I mean, it's on Amazon Prime. If you have a Prime membership, you can watch it for free. Go for it.
Check it out. All right. Well, I haven't really – I watched some Lethal Weapon. That's about it. So that's about all I got. Don't forget to subscribe to The Hollywood Outsider on your podcast app of choice. Go to thehollywoodoutsider.com. Or Spotify, or which I know we're growing a little bit on Spotify, so be sure to check that out as well. You know, whatever you listen on, subscribe, and that way you'll get the next new episode, which is going to be we're going to have a compilation, and then we'll have our whole awards. So that'll be pretty exciting. The best of the best of the best. I'm looking forward to that.
With honors.
This is the last regular episode for us for the year. Is there anything you want to say as we wrap up 2017, Scott?
Oh, thanks for an awesome year. I've met some great people, met some in person even, and I had a great time doing so. And I'm looking forward to 2018 very much.
All right. And be sure to check out The Gaming Outsider as well.
Thank you. Yes, The Gaming Outsider. My website, my podcast, all about video games. So be sure to check that out. And we are doing a year-end episode as well, where we're going to be talking about our favorite video games of the year. So be sure to check that out.
And John, anything you want to say as we wrap up?
You know what? For this year, I want to end by saying thank you and good night.
And that's the way it was.
Wow, that just happened. And for me, look for smirkpodcast.com. There's a new podcast called Smirk that I'm a part of, and I think it's interesting. It has nothing to do with movies and TV, so it's interesting, though, and I hope you guys will check it out. Look for Smirk around Christmas time. That's all I got to say. All right. Now, as we head out, for the last regular episode of 2017, I just want to tell you guys, the next time you head to a theater, buy some popcorn. Family. My mom listened to the first episode of Smirk and gave all the kudos to Zach and Amanda, like, I'm not part of it. Yeah. I was like, Zach's really good at podcasting. You mean, like, how many awards do I need to get, Mom, before... All right, I'm ready if you guys are ready.
I know how to tell a whole story, so I know how to make my decisions.
What? You cut out.
Yeah, you couldn't.
It's not that important.
Okay. All right, then let's go. This is The Hollywood Outsider, a weekly movie and TV podcast, which can be found at The Hollywood... You know what? I'm going to do that again, because I think we deserve this. Hang on.
What?
Hang on. I'm tired.
I love how he's like, hey, you guys want to get this shit going?
Yeah.
Let me do two takes.
All right. Hey, if ever there was a time for it. I've been doing a lot of editing, so every time I hear a lip smack, at this point, it makes my brain hurt. Because it's not anybody in particular. It's literally everyone. But it's just like, it just burns in your ear.
So when you rewatch the Psych movie, it makes you crazy because they keep on sucking their teeth at each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Man, you really are selling that movie.
Oh, it's a great, woo! You know what?
People sucking their teeth at each other?
Shut your warm mouth. Shut it.
You don't. You haven't earned the right to be this way about it.
You can't bash the Psych. I'm gonna go watch the Star Wars Holiday Special. I'm really excited about a Wookiee banging.
Oh my god,
banging Wookiees!
You want to see a Wookiee get like a sex toy?
Yeah. Who doesn't? Does it have hair on it?
No,
sex toy.
It's not that kind of sex toy.
What other kind of sex toys are there?
You just have to wait and see. I told you about it already.
You just said a Wookiee and a sex toy. You didn't really say what it was.
No, I told you via text the other day that Chewbacca's grandfather. Is it Chewbacca's? No, it's his grandfather. It's his father.
It's his father, Lobaka. Or, yeah.
His father, straps into a virtual reality porn chair and is more or less getting off to some African-American singer with purple hair.
Hey, you
purple
know what?
Purple hair.
People are into whatever they're into, man. It's the holidays. I'm into some freaky stuff. You know what I do with candy canes? I don't even want to talk about it.
This is taking a weird turn.
This is the Hollywood Outsider, our weekly movie and TP.
It's a teepee.
I think we're all ready for this break to come up.
Yeah. Okay. This
The teepee is a puppet. He's a teepee. He's a puppet.
We're losing Scott.
I think he just muted himself, which takes all the fun of losing Scott out of the picture.
Well, no, I didn't mute. I was trying to be good.
I thought maybe somebody said Die Hard Christmas, and he was like, nope, I'm done.
Nope.
See? That's all you got to say. Now I know how you get Scott quiet. Scott, Die Hard Christmas. And then he goes to his happy place.